This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Total Saints podcast. I'm Martin Stark. We stream each episode of TSP Live on our Facebook page and our YouTube channel. So if you're watching live on either of those platforms, you can get involved in the conversation using the comments section. Coming up this week on the podcast, reaction to the final game at home of the season, Tuesday night's defeat to Liverpool. And there's one game left to go. Thankfully, we're going to preview the trip to Leicester City on Sunday. Let me introduce you to our TSP guest. Let's go around the screen. Steve Grant is owner of Saints Web Evening. Steve, how's your evening?
Fairly quiet so far, but yeah, I mean, it was a long old drive back last night after just a dour 90 minutes, wasn't it? But yeah, other than that, fairly quiet, just getting on with work in the process of selling my car, which has been just a barrel of laughs.
Give it a plug at the end, maybe free ads.
No, I've already agreed to sale, so can't do anything now. Contract signed with someone, so all good.
Lovely. Glenn Delacour is the writer of the weekly Saints blog, League One Minus Ten. Selling anything, Glenn? Anything to offer?
Selling anything? No, yeah. No, not at all. Got nothing that's worth any money.
Just looking forward to the summer now, are we?
Actually, I'm going to sell my car as well, but it's going to go to a broker's yard for about £200. I think Steve might be a little bit more in the money after selling his. But the 20-year-old Ford Focus has finally died. But it's a cricket season now, so I don't want to talk about football.
You're done.
I've started playing cricket myself. We've had two wins from two games, and I've kind of forgotten how much it hurts afterwards. So just keeping wicket for 16 overs, and I can't move for about 3 days afterwards now. So all good fun. Yeah, looking forward to the football season being finished.
Good. Yeah, I think we all are. And Dan Sheldon is the dedicated Southampton reporter for The Athletic. How's your week been, Dan? Was that your last home game yesterday, I guess? Or last Premier League home game? Oh, he's on mute.
He's on mute.
We've gone so far into the season, he's finally done it.
Last first team home game, but at the under 18s Thursday night, and then off to Leicester. So yeah. On the cricket thing, I used to play cricket at school and I hadn't played in years, and someone invited me to a cricket day last summer, and I thought it'd be easy, turn up, hit the ball a bit. The next morning, I was in absolute bits. I had no idea how tiring cricket could be if you're like batting for quite a while. It's horrible.
The secret is don't bat for very long. I've been doing that for a long time.
Of course, the biggest hello and thank you is reserved to our patrons, wherever you might be listening or watching this week. Welcome to episode 198 of the Total Saints podcast.
This is the Total Saints podcast with Martin Stark, Steve Grant, Glenn Delacour, and The Athletic's Dan Sheldon.
Just a reminder about our live event, which is coming up. This is going to be on Friday week, which is the 27th of May. It's a special live podcast for our 200th episode. We're going to be at the Five Rivers Sports Bar, which is in Beavers Valley in Southampton. It's going to be a 7 o'clock arrival. I think we go live at 8. The evening is going to be supporting the Saints Foundation. 100% of the ticket proceeds are going directly to the charity. Going to be looking back at the highs and the lows of the season, discussing what business needs to be done in the summer. We're going to crown the winner of the TSP Fantasy Football League as well. Remember that? We'll also have your chance to quiz the panel and share a drink with some fellow Saints fans. So if you're interested in coming along, you can find the link to the event in the description for this podcast. So the final home game of the season ends in defeat to Liverpool. I don't know if you saw the official email from the club today. It said we were edged out, which I thought was quite optimistic. Steve, did we prove it's possible to lose by one goal and still get stuffed yesterday?
Yeah, it was just weird, wasn't it? I think the thing that was the most frustrating was that the handful of times we actually kind of broke out into more than a jog and tried to kind of run at them, we actually caused quite a few problems. I think that was the most infuriating thing by the end of it, that like last 5 minutes we pegged them back, and obviously Redmond had obviously scored the goal in the first half. Great goal that was. And it was more or less identical to that one he got on the final day against Huddersfield a couple of years ago. And yeah, it's just, this team do my head in. It's just, don't really know what we were trying to achieve other than, oh, we're just going to sit back and try and close the space off and just lump it long and then hope that in the last 5 minutes we're vaguely still in the game. But it was just boring. I mean, you go into the game kind of always fearing the worst against a good team, no matter what side they've put out. I mean, yeah, I know they made loads of changes from the cup final, which is understandable having gone all the way to penalties, but that's still a good team that we were coming up against. And yet we still managed to make them look a hell of a lot better than they were just by not doing the basics. I mean, I think sort of tackle numbers are kind of overstated, because I'm generally of the opinion that if you're putting a lot of tackles in, you're probably in the wrong position to start with. But there was very little closing down. We kind of seemed to wait until they were sort of within 30 yards of goal before anybody tried to close any spaces down, even. So there were very few interceptions by anyone other than probably Jack Stevens and Lianco were the prime ones making interceptions. But then as soon as we win the ball back, we even try a simple 5 yard pass. We can't even get that right. So the ball just kept coming back at us. And I mean, the goal kicks. I mean, Alex McCarthy looked like he'd never touched a football before in his life. And we were asking him to kind of play out from the back, a guy who's not played a first team game for 6 months. And he just looked terrified. And yet we persisted on doing it right till the very end. Like literally the first goal kick he put long was in the 89th minute. And it's just like, why are we persisting with things that you can very clearly see with your own eyes that it's just not working? I think that's the frustrating thing. That I don't necessarily subscribe to, well, we should have just had a go, just run at them from the start and get, if we get picked off on the break, then, and we get hammered, then so be it. I don't necessarily subscribe to that, but there's definitely a balancing act somewhere in the middle of that, where I think you could have shown a little bit more attacking intent, throughout that game.
Yeah, the balance wasn't quite right yesterday. Glenn, Liverpool made 9 changes. To be fair, they could have made 11. It was the B team. We'd probably struggled against the C team, really. It was one of those nights.
I agree with what Steve said there. They were still very good. I actually enjoyed watching some of the Liverpool players. I've never really appreciated how good Firmino is. He was brilliant yesterday. It's a single touch to control it, and usually he's controlling it for someone else to run onto. Like, he knows where the person is he's going to knock it to. And even if it's a player like Minamino, who he doesn't normally sort of play with, they all knew what they were doing. They were very, very well organized. I mean, they were, you know, they seemed to, they changed 11 players and their level didn't change, which is kind of similar to us in lots of ways, but not quite.
Different ends of the scale.
Doesn't matter what 11 we pick at the moment. Yeah, I mean, Liverpool were good, but we were bloody awful. I mean, let's face it, we were clueless. I thought Ralph picked a team as if we were going to play against Liverpool's first team. And he should have been modifying it somewhat as soon as he saw Liverpool's lineup. And it was noticeable for the first sort of 5 minutes, Liverpool were just getting used to each other, and we had the sort of half chance with Brozier when he ran through and we got the goal. But after that, it was just sit back and wait for them to score, which they eventually did. You know, it was a good finish by Minamino, you know, fair enough. But what disappointed me most was the part of the game after Liverpool had gone in front, because at that point, there was really nothing to lose. And if we'd got beat 3-1, so what? But we didn't do anything until the 91st minute. There was three like-for-like substitutions, which is fine, but it's the commitment to run forward and try and make things happen. And Ralph was, you know, he thought we were brave. Sorry, rubbish. We weren't. I mean, Kamikaze passing across the back five and the goalkeeper just to work enough space for the fullback to clag the ball up the pitch to Brozier. That's not being brave. You know, brave is coming short for the ball, wanting it in tight spaces, holding on to it, doing something to affect the, you know, trying to take your game to the opposition. And we didn't do any of that. And when we were playing well, that's what we did. And that's what Ralph's built his name on. He talked about this, you know, getting back to what we're good at after the infamous game against Leicester. And we seem to have gone a million miles away from that again now. And we're just passively turning up. And we're not good enough to defend. I do feel that we have put a couple of players in at kind of auditions, if you like, for next season, like Diallo and Teller, perhaps. And rubbish. They're totally failing. If this is an audition, those two and a few others are failing. They're just showing that they're just not up to it. But it's not just their fault. They're not alone. I don't feel that the tactics were right. I felt sorry for Armando Brozier again. You know, he's got a circle of 30 yards around him. I mean, can you imagine the instructions? You're up on your own against Konate and Matip, two of the biggest, quickest centre-halves you're ever going to play against. You're going to have no players anywhere near you, and the ball's going to be hammered at you from 60 yards away, and you've got to do something with it.
Do your best.
What chance have you got? There's no player in the world that could do that. It was just grim from start to finish. And as Steve said, really, really boring. Really boring, that second half. Just waiting for them to score and then knowing that we weren't going to do anything about it.
Mark's watching on Facebook. He says, a team picked and set up not to get a hammering. Is that fair, Dan? Was that your assessment on that? It was all about not getting a hammering last night?
Yeah, that's certainly what it looked like. I mean, it was similar to the Arsenal game when Southampton just sat back and defended for 90 minutes. The difference is that Liverpool are a lot better, or Liverpool's B team are seemingly a lot better than Arsenal's first team. To be honest, I don't really know what to say about this match. It was crap. It was boring. I'm not going to take credit for this because I saw it on Twitter, but it was like watching a League Two team play against like a Premier League side in the FA Cup third round, only that the League Two team would normally go for it a bit more than Southampton did and show a bit more adventure. Yeah, it was just crap. I'm sorry, that's really all I can say about that game.
Summing it up in one word, yeah. Steve Redmond's first goal of the season. I mean, that's the kind of problem there, isn't it?
He was good, actually.
I was going to say, actually, that came out of it. One of the positives, we start him at wing-back.
It's a low bar.
He finds the net. Just talk us through that goal, Steve. Was there was talk about maybe a foul in the build-up from Lianco? I know. Klopp wasn't happy, but
Klopp's never happy.
But
yeah, I mean, I'll stop that sentence before you end up having to get the bleeper out. But Klopp just pathetic. Grow up. Yeah, okay. It might have been given as a foul on another day, but it wasn't. You still had 70 yards of space to defend. And Redmond was basically unchallenged for that entire time. So from his perspective, crap defending. But from Redmond's perspective, yeah, I mean, actually, for once, it showed that, like one of those rare moments where he shows that he does have confidence when he's in a particular moment. And yeah, I mean, he cut inside and I think slight deflection off James Milner, but I'm not convinced Alisson would have got it anyway, because it didn't seem to alter the path of the ball that much. And yeah, great finish. And yeah, as you say, he was one of the few that came out with any vague sense of positivity, particularly given that for a large part of that game, he was kind of playing as a left wing back, even a sort of fifth defensive fullback, if you like, when they had the ball. It's the same old problem with Redmond, isn't it? That you can see that he can do these things and have these decent performances in moments, and there's just as much likelihood of him turning up at Leicester and putting in an absolute stinker to follow it up. So it's one of those. He's been here, 4 years now? And
six, I think. Yeah. Yeah, it's about six.
Christ, God. Time flies when you're not necessarily having fun.
Because he was the replacement for Sadio Mane.
Yes. and then so was Moussa Dzeneppo.
Yeah.
Which has also gone swimmingly. But no, I mean, to be fair to Redmond, he's contributed a reasonable amount over his time, certainly more than many. This just frustrating that nobody apart from him really stuck their hand up and said, yeah, I fancy a bit of this game. I fancy being the guy that definitely stops Liverpool getting the quadruple. Because let's face it, everyone in the stands wanted that. But it became fairly obvious even before half time that it was, I mean, as Glenn said, it was a case of when they score rather than if.
Yeah.
I was a bit frustrated that a load of people around me were giving McCarthy stick for the goal. But I mean, from what, 8 yards out and hit at the pace he's put it right into the top corner. I don't think any keeper saves that.
No.
I mean, this idea, oh, you shouldn't ever be beaten at the near post. But then by that same token, you then leave the entire far post open. That's just not the way, that's not the way goalkeepers work. It's not the way physics and angles work.
That goal was right in front of me. And I mean, we remember, I mean, Minamino didn't do much when he played for us, but he can hit a ball and he absolutely smashed that. So I don't think you can blame McCarthy for that one.
What did you make of the defending yesterday, Glenn? Obviously, McCarthy coming in as well. I looked a bit nervous at the back. And,
Very much so. I thought Lianco stood up well, to be honest. I thought he did okay. He's mad, obviously. I mean, he got himself into trouble in the second half when he tried to do his usual and bring a ball that travelled 70 yards down on his chest. And I think it was Diogo Jota he was up against. And he got very lucky to get awarded the free kick for that.
Oh, I've forgotten about that.
But I like him. I like his attitude. And I'd like to see him it's too late now, run out of season. But I'd like to see him get a run of games just to see if he's first team material or if he's ever, you know, if he's ever going to progress past being a backup. I thought he did all right. Jack Stevens was Jack Stevens, exactly as you know he's going to be. He does some good things and then he does some things where you just think, oh my word, what is that? Salisu was all right. So none of the back three were that bad. And to be honest, Liverpool didn't have that many chances to score. I think the problems were further forward. I don't think any of the, so if you take Teller, Elyounoussi, Ward-Prowse, Diallo, sort of the midfield four, if you like, I don't think any of those had good games at all. And Brozier was in a different postcode most of the game. So it was just very, very hard to get anything going forward. We struggled with Liverpool's press. You know, they're like Manchester City. They're very good at it. They swarm all over you. They know exactly what to do, even with, you know, nine changes. They knew how to stop us playing. And that was why we ended up just booming the ball long. We didn't have the, you know, occasionally we did. I think we did it once and we managed to sort of pass our way through. And that was the chance that Brozier had in the first sort of couple of minutes. But after that, it just didn't happen. So, So the defending overall wasn't bad, but you know, we did set up to defend, and I think the consequence of us being relatively solid was that we didn't do anything at all going forward.
And just on the winner, Dan, the corner that came in and the marking, Kyle Walker-Peters, quite a short player, marking quite a tall player, and then Elyounoussi flicking it on. I know that you picked up on that yesterday. That's something that they need to improve next season for sure.
Well, yeah, it's something I just asked Raf about, really, why Kyle Walker-Peters was marking Joel Matip at a corner, given the considerable height difference and that, you know, there is a coach at Southampton whose job it is to worry about set pieces. So I just kind of asked, was that a deliberate tactic? And I didn't really get an answer other than Elyounoussi should have cleared it rather than flicked it on. So that's as much as Ralph really wanted to say on the matter. He says, you know, if Elyounoussi heads it away rather than flicks it back, you know, over a shoulder, then no one talks about it. But the point still stands is you've got Kyle Walker-Peters marking Joel Matip, regardless of whether he flicks that on or not. So, yeah, I don't know. It was a weird goal. It was a weird goal. The way it seemed to loop for ages before.
Yeah, it looked like an own goal, didn't it? Did it come off?
Yeah, it did. I thought it was an own goal. So yeah. When I watched a couple of replays, I thought, oh, it's kind of headed off Walker-Peters, but the Premier League seemingly gave it to Matip. So,
can you imagine though being Joel Matip? You go up for a corner, and Konate was being marked.
He probably couldn't even see who was marking him, and that's no disrespect to Kyle Walker-Peters.
Konate was being marked by Diallo, so that's another complete mismatch. So, and he's about 6'8", isn't he? He just looks enormous.
We are starting to question what's on that iPad that they will look at for the free kicks, aren't we?
Yeah, but it's like, you know, Steve said with the playing, out from the back. If it doesn't work, then change it.
One more go.
This free kick, defending corners has been an absolute disaster now for a few weeks, but we're still doing the same thing.
Yeah.
What's going to affect Joel Matip more? If he's got Salisu standing on him, he's not going to be so confident about getting his head in there, is he? Then if he's got a run and all he's got to do is knock Kyle Walker-Peters out of the way, referee's not going to see it, and then he's got a free run to head the ball. It's just ridiculous. Groundhog Day. Definition of madness. Doing the same things and expecting a different result.
But at least at the weekend, we're playing against a team who are even worse than us at
defending at corners.
Oh, yeah.
There is that. Speaking of Groundhog Day, Nick says, why does Ralph always wait so long to make changes? This is something that we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, Steve. I think it was 71 minutes maybe yesterday. Is it just that he doesn't trust the bench? Is it that he's happy with what he sees? Are we missing something here? These games are crying out for changes. And for whatever reason, from a man that's been asking for five subs, he seems a bit reluctant to chop people in.
Yeah, I mean, it's been odd, isn't it, that the managers who are most vocal about this five subs thing seem to be the ones that are least likely to actually use their subs. Like Pep again at the weekend didn't use any subs for City, which was fairly mad given the situation of that game. But it comes back to sort of what we've had at various stages over Ralph's, what, three and a bit years, that every time we kind of question certain aspects of his management, 6 weeks later, we're sat here talking, saying, "No, it looks as if he's turned the corner on this. Looks as if he's worked it out." And then another 3 weeks later, oh, it's all gone to pot again. Hmm. And it's like he's completely forgotten what he'd learned. And yeah, I mean, the bench was strong enough, wasn't it, that we had? And I mean, I think the three subs that came on were probably marginally better than the players they replaced, but fairly low bar, and possibly being a little bit harsh on Brozier, because I think Adams got more service in the 10 minutes he was on than Brozier did in the previous 80. But yeah, it is as if, like, I don't know whether he gets wrapped up in the game and just forgets that he's got these other players that he can use. Like, he doesn't have, doesn't seem as if any of the other coaches are proactive enough to sort of say anything during the game. Like you look at the bench during game, and it doesn't seem as if there are conversations going on there. It seems as if Ralph stands out on the edge of the technical area for the most part and is kind of encouraging and sort of pointing out specific things, but there's nothing coming in, and which is odd given that you've got analysts sat there who are presumably analyzing things, and surely they're not just waiting for half time to show stuff on a screen and say, look, this is what you were doing in the 12th minute. Surely that should have been pointed out much sooner, because then you actually get into half time having been able to make a change and affect the game. But yeah, we are in this situation now, and I mean, something's got to give. I think I don't really know what it is. I don't know whether they go for a clean sweep, whether they're able to find a particular coach who comes in who's got a little bit more about him and a bit more kind of gravitas that he feels able to call Ralph out on things. Because it's pretty clear that none of the guys that are there now do. So, yes, that part of it, kind of just pointing out the obvious stuff, it's just someone tell him. It's mad.
Do you agree, Glenn? Do you think it's another voice in his ear that's missing at the moment, because he does seem reluctant to make the changes?
Yeah, we seem to come back to this one every time there's a dip, it is a strange one, because obviously there are times when we play really well and it's obviously not a problem then, but when you are in a bad trot like we are at the moment, then it's the sort of thing that gets highlighted. I think there are certain things that these coaches are responsible for. I mean, like we highlighted it last week, the defending set pieces is just a calamity every time, waiting to happen. It just looks awful. I mean, we got away with that one with Firmino in the first half, didn't we? Where we did our usual, we just stood in a high line and hoped to Christ one of them was offside, and he was by about I don't know, a couple of feet. So, it, you know, it was close. We got away with it. That one does actually seem to be quite effective. But yeah, I do question what some of the others actually contribute. And you do need someone, I think, to point out things. If you do get lost in the game, I do feel that Ralph is just a little bit slow sometimes. He seems to almost expect things to change. You know, if it's not going well, it will change. And it never seems to. I think he's a little bit too loyal sometimes, either to his own ideas that he's had at the start of the game, or to certain players. It just seems to take a hell of a long time to realise that some people just aren't up to it, or this formation isn't working. And that just seems to make him too slow to change things. And, you know, it's hindsight, of course, but if we'd made a change at halftime, then maybe we wouldn't have gone 2-1 down in the 65th minute, but we waited until after we had gone 2-1 down before making the change. So, I mean, we're led to believe that Ralph is one of the highest paid managers outside the top six. So he should be, he should be doing better than he is.
He should be earning his money, yeah.
And whether it's down to him or the coaches, they're obviously comfortable with the setup that they've got, because this setup's been in place now for a couple of years.
Mm.
So it will be difficult for anyone to say, oi, you've got to have another Danny Roll figure as your number two. I get the impression that kind of Ralph would have to agree with it, which is, I'm not sure that's entirely healthy. But it is something where an area that I wouldn't be surprised if there is a little bit of movement in the summer, as well as the inevitable and much needed shake-up of the playing staff.
Do you think it's a bit of stubbornness, Dan? It seems to me that we're learning more about Ralph as a character at the moment, where we're struggling to get a win, and he his man management and perhaps his willingness to make those changes. He does seem a little bit stubborn at times.
Yeah, I mean, stubborn is probably a good word to describe him. On the coaches, it's something I kind of think a lot about. But then at the same time, you've got to kind of weigh up the question, is he not listening? Or does he not want their ideas? Is it a case of them sitting there and doing nothing, or what appears to be doing nothing during the game? Or is it because he doesn't want them to come up to him and give him ideas? I mean, I don't know the answer, but there'll be a fine balance. You know, there's got to be a reason why nobody goes and stands on his shoulder throughout the game. The only time that ever happens is when he's got to look at the iPad, or Andrew Sparks goes to give the fourth official the substitute card. So, yeah, I just kind of agree with everything that Glenn and Steve have really said about the coaches. I think he needs a fresh voice. In terms of him having to agree to it, I think you just say tough. Yeah. you know, here are three candidates. You know, you can have a say, these are the guys we want. You can pick the final one or whatever. And then, yeah, because they haven't replaced Danny Roll. And I'm a big fan of Danny's anyway, but you only have to kind of go on and look at the success he has had. And yes, okay, he's working with Hansi Flick, and yes, he worked with Bayern Munich, but there's a reason why Hansi Flick was desperate for him to go to the German national team. And there's a reason why Julian Nagelsmann was desperate for him to stay at Bayern Munich. It's because he's good. And he would challenge Ralf. He would come up with his own ideas. There isn't any of that now. Or if there is, Ralf isn't listening. So it's down to the people at the club who, you know, make the decisions to work out what it is and then fix it. Really, because as you say, there are so many coaches. I mean, I say that Tottenham have got about a million backroom staff, but there are so many kind of seemingly assistant managers, but none of them step up to that assistant manager role. So what is the point in having four or five guys there when they're not, on the face of it, certainly in a stadium, doing much at all?
Hmm. Yeah. One game left to go. Leicester on Sunday. We played Leicester back in December. That was off the back of defeat to Liverpool as well. 2-2 on that occasion. That was Bednarek scoring after 3 minutes. Steve, do you want to start? Would you settle for another 2-2 draw on Sunday?
Oh, take something just to stop the rot. Yeah.
That's the point.
I wouldn't be completely against that.
Momentum into the summer.
Yeah. I mean, Well, I mean, just some goals. I mean, Leicester are little bit of a difficult one to gauge at the moment, because they seem to be playing basically all of the dreadful teams. And I mean, they're beating them and beating them fairly comfortably, but I don't think you really learn an awful lot from smashing teams that are already relegated, as they've obviously hammered Norwich and Watford in the last week or so. But their game against Chelsea on tomorrow night is quite useful for us in many ways, because I mean, Leicester don't have a big squad because they've had loads of injuries this season again. And as a result, they're going to have 2 days fewer preparation than we have. Although I'm not sure it really made an awful lot of difference in the end, based on last night's evidence.
10 days to prepare for that.
Yeah. As I mentioned earlier, their record for defending set pieces is even worse than ours. So I fancy that might be an option for us. But I mean, there's nothing to play for either side other than, I mean, from Leicester's perspective, they've still got league position.
Top 10.
We can't go any higher now. We're stuck at best of 15th. And I think we'll probably finish there because I'm not convinced that Everton or Burnley will get two results that they need to go past us. But yeah, it's just such a damp squib of an end, isn't it? And the problem is, I would imagine it affects season ticket sales. It certainly affects the morale of people going into the summer, and you've got, 10, 12 weeks before the next game. And it's just, you then start on the back foot at the start of next season. Whereas if you go to Leicester on Sunday and we get a good win somehow, all of a sudden the mood does change. It's like, there are some green shoots that we can see, and they draw us all back in again, and we're all then looking vaguely positive for the summer. But who knows? Yeah, I mean, if they rock up as if they're on the beach again, then we'll get spanked and everyone be fuming again.
How would you set up for this one, Glenn? I mean, we've talked about like the tactics and the players that have come in, and it kind of feels like we've seen enough of the squad players. He's made his mind up about people and they've had the opportunity to impress. Nobody seems to have taken that. So is it just whoever's fit and whoever's up for it? There's not a lot of positives, is there really?
Well, I'd say pick the players who are going to be here next year. Pick the players who you think are going to be part of your plans next year, and then the
other eight are just be.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe put some of the youngsters in.
Yeah,
you know, put some of the real youngsters in. Maybe, you know, Tyler Diblin was on the bench a couple of weeks ago, wasn't he? Maybe not from the start, but certainly, you know, give some of these players a run out last game of the season, because at least then, even if we're getting beat, we can get something out of it. You know, hand a couple of debuts out, and at least it will stop the crowd chanting for the manager to be sacked for 10 minutes at least.
Well, I guess tomorrow is a problem in that regard, because the 18s are playing tomorrow night, aren't they?
Yeah, maybe. But I don't know. It's really hard to say. I mean, normally against Leicester, you'd set up and play the normal, you know, the 4-2-2-2 formation. Though I noticed they've been playing three at the back mainly this season, but because of all the injuries they've had, they've sort of gone to a flat back four. So slightly different to what they normally do. But, you know, they've got a better squad of players than we've got, let's face it. And normally this would be a very difficult game. But it'll be interesting to see if Jamie Vardy's mind's on it. I'm sure it will be. James Maddison seems to be playing really well at the moment. But again, as Steve's said, they've played Watford and Norwich and, you know, no great shakes. But they have put them away. They'll be going into the game with a lot more confidence than we'll be going into it with. So not overly optimistic, I have to say.
Dan, I feel a bit guilty because this would be your last game covering Southampton after how many years?
Four and a bit, I think, yeah.
And I feel bad that it's going to be such a damp squib. It's not going to be a classic. Are you just going to be glad to get it out of the way and over and done with now and move on?
Yeah.
I know you're not an emotional man, are you? You're not going to be crying at the final whistle.
No. Well, I mean, it depends what the scoreline is.
Tears of joy.
Yeah, maybe. I've known that about the Manchester thing for quite a while, so it's not as if...
You're at peace with it.
I'm at peace with it, yeah. I feel like now is the, you know, I just don't think I can take another 2 or 3 months of what we've all had to watch since they lost to Villa away.
We're a little bit envious, to be honest. I can see some predictions coming in already. Sonny's gone for a 4-1 loss at Leicester, which is not good. Let's do predictions for the final time this season. You'll be
pleased. Have I won the league? Or?
Yeah, it's pretty much home and home. I don't want to spoil everything because we're going to reveal who's won at the live event. But yeah, pretty much. they've started carving your name on the trophy.
Oh,
Steve, do you want to go first? Leicester away? What are we thinking?
1-0 defeat. I think we'll set up in a tedious way, and because Ralph will just have it in his head that we defended well. We only lost by the odd goal to one of the best teams in the world at, on Tuesday. So yeah, 1-0 Leicester.
Glenn, score prediction, please, for the final time.
3-1 Leicester. I think we might actually score a goal. This is the Prowsey set piece, either sticking one on someone's head or scoring from a free kick himself. So I think we might get a goal, but I think it'll be another limp performance since the Villa game when we lost 4-0. Certainly since the Chelsea game, we seem to have lost any sort of forward momentum, and the football we've been playing has been downright boring, to be honest. And you know, we're just turning up hoping to nick games, and I don't see this one being any different. You know, if we're going to go to Burnley and play passive football and hope to nick it, then we're certainly going to go to Leicester and do the same thing. So unless there's a major rethink, just because it's the last game of the season and it's like that last day at work before Christmas when everyone goes to the pub at lunchtime and gets smashed, then I'm not expecting much out of it. So yeah, whatever I said, I've forgotten now. 3-1 defeat.
Dan, final game then. What do you reckon?
Last ever prediction. Let's go 4-4. Yeah.
Four. Going out like Fergie did at West Brom.
Yeah, a Prowsey free kick and three Vestergaard own goals.
I wonder what odds you get on that.
Well, good odds, mate.
Well, Vestergaard won't even be on the bench, I wouldn't have thought.
Well, maybe.
No.
Who knows?
What's happened to Ryan Bertrand? Is he injured? Injured all season.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. A couple of other bits before we finish. Tomorrow, which is Thursday, if you're listening to this, the under-18s take on Man City at St Mary's. It's the national title up for grabs. Tickets are free, so they're hoping for a bit of a good turnout for this one. And Dan, you're going to be there covering the game, so could be an interesting one from the under-18s.
Yeah, I would encourage anyone really to, if they've got some, you know, some time, it kicks off at 7, as you say, go down and watch them. I think the under-18s have been super impressive this season. 26 games. Only lost 4 times, scored 80 goals from memory.
Most of those defeats were quite early on as well, weren't
they? They were, yeah. Yeah, played Chelsea off the park at Cobham last month in a really good display. So, yeah, I mean, if you want to go and watch a Southampton team that may bring a smile to your face.
Put a bit of effort in.
Yeah, then I would certainly encourage you to go down and watch the under-18s. Will be a difficult game because obviously Man City are very, very good and have recently got into the habit of buying the kind of best 16, 17-year-olds from other academies, including one player from Southampton. Yeah. And the two teams met in pre-season last summer, and it was 3-1 to Man City, but it was quite a convincing 3-1 win. But yeah, I think Saints are in a really good run of form. Yeah, so they're going to be on a high from the title win, which they kind of secured with a victory over Reading. So yeah, I would certainly encourage people to get down. Hopefully there'll be more people there than there were for the club's lap of appreciation.
The lap of appreciation.
Someone had to mention that, surely.
I was going to ask you.
Stephen Glenn, like, what lap of appreciation? I didn't see that.
I heard about it.
Yeah. The other big game, of course, Steve, is the women's match, which it's bizarre that they've had to wait so long for this game.
That's
against
mad.
It feels like we've been talking about it for ages, but that's on Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock.
And well, it's been in the diary for, I think, 5 weeks.
Winner takes all, isn't it?
Since we wrapped up the title. Yeah, I mean, it's a massive game, and it looks as if they've come up with some sort of deal with BBC to put it on the red button. So that's good. Useful for anybody who, for whatever reason, can't make it all the way up to Stockport. I'd look at trains, and they were looking at like £95 return for the day. So it's just like, oh, I can't justify that. So yeah, I'll watch on the stream. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's two teams that won their league by miles. So it'll be, I mean, we've discussed this before, haven't we? Glenn's made the point that it's ridiculous that there's only one team up from this level when you've got two divisions of, what, 14, 15 teams in them. But we are where we are, and you know, yeah, one match shootout, and hopefully it comes out in our favour.
What's even more ridiculous is if, let's say, Wolves win and they turn around, which they can do, and say, actually, we're not quite ready for the Championship yet, so we're going to forfeit our place.
We wouldn't go up, would we?
It doesn't go to Southampton, no. It goes to who finishes second in their league, which is bonkers. Yeah, it will go to who finishes second.
I just assumed they'd basically just not relegate anymore.
No, whoever finishes second
Jesus Christ.
Wolves' league goes up.
And that's another, you know, I don't like to say things like this, but that...
You've had issues with this all the way through, it's madness, absolute madness.
You know, women's football is trying to be taken seriously, but you've got Mickey Mouse stuff like that going on. The fact that
it's all in the committee rooms, isn't it, where they make these nonsense decisions.
The fact that this game is in Stockport, surely it should have been two legs, one at Saints, one at Wolves. Surely that could have been arranged. The fact that it's taken so long to do it, the fact that it's only one team that goes up, you know, the fact that that thing you've just said there, which is just beyond belief. But yeah, there you go. I can't imagine that either team would say no to promotion.
No. But I think it'll be a really important day and a good day actually for the club. You know, I remember I was at the Echo at the time when we kind of got the story that the club were pumping £1 million into it. And that was kind of the start of the journey. And, you know, they had big ambitions in 5 years to be in the top tier. And I know they had back-to-back curtailments. So, you know, if they can get over the line, I just think it would be such a good moment for Marianne, who's obviously brilliant. And, you know, they've got some good players. And you kind of wonder, after another good season, if they don't go up, would those players attract interest from elsewhere? Could they keep that squad together? So I think it'll be a really important step for them to go up. And it'll just be a nice moment for the club as well, in general, you know, back to kind of 4 or 5 years ago when they made that initial investment. And, you know, fans may not like it, but it was Les Reed and Martin Hunter who kind of drove it. And Toby Steele very much took it on after those two departed. So, yeah, it'll just be kind of a big pat on the back to everyone if they do manage to pull it off.
Yeah, it'd be great for them. Great if we get a win tomorrow as well, and great for a win on Saturday. Before we go, big shout out to our loyal and much-loved patrons in our Matt Letizia tier. We've got Colt Baker, Dave Ernsberger, Ed Busy, Phil Cook, and Nick Higston. In the Francis Benali tier, we've got Nick Reed, Matt Hall, and Dave Melton. And to find out more about becoming a TSP patron and all the benefits that come with that, do check out the website. Thank you to Steve, Glenn, and Dan. We're going to be back on Sunday after the Leicester game. Of course, we've got the live show coming up on Friday the 27th, which is for the 200th episode. Lots of comments tonight about people that could be coming in the summer, any business that we need to do. So we'll be addressing all of that at the live show. You can get your tickets in the description for the podcast. Thanks very much for listening this week, and have a wonderful couple of days.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.